Well, let's welcome the newest member to the 1116 SEN commentary team. We know him very well, of course, former St Kilda captain and Richmond coach. His name is Danny Frawley. Good to have you on board, Spud.
Great,
welcome.
Great to be here, Matty. Spud. Moons, how are you going, mate? Happy New Year to all the listeners. Very excited, a little bit nervous, Matty, sitting here. The last time I was sitting in this room was about 8 games to go when I was coaching the Tigers, so I was a little bit mentally fragile, Moons, at that stage. I didn't have to open the door to walk in. Actually, I just sneaked in under the door. I was feeling that low, Matty, but it's great to be here.
Hey, Spud, funny you say that, because one of your last media conferences at Richmond I was at, and I can remember you were very...
How was I looking?
You were very angry that particular day.
Was I?
And I asked you, I can remember asking you a question, and you looked at me and said, where have you been living in a cave? Can you remember that? Can you remember that media conference?
Matty, I remember that vividly, and I do apologise now.
Oh, that's okay.
But I think I was like that Monty Python film, the guy with no arms and no legs, but I was keen to bite a few kneecaps off on the way out, mate. I was copping bullets everywhere. Hey, it was a great time at the Tigers, and looking back, they were great years, and it was a great opportunity, and then obviously went into the media and been there for the last 14, 15 years, and to be here at SEN this year, very, very excited.
Hey, Spud, you're doing obviously work down at St Kilda, doing some back stuff. Do you talk with Richo on the back of, you've obviously been through the hell and back of being a senior coach and all the horrible things that can come with it? There's great things that come with it, but there's some horrible things, obviously the media and the scrutiny, the supporters when they're on your back. Do you talk to him about all that, or is he still in a bit of... holiday mode, I guess, as far as his time there.
Yeah, it's interesting, Moons. I've got a great relationship with Richo. It was quite interesting yesterday. We were doing a drill and I was just sort of dagging around out the back there. And Richo said, just pick a couple of those cones up, Spud. So I picked them up and I said to Nick Rewald, gee, things have changed, because Richo was my reserves coach at Richmond. I said 14 years ago, he was picking my cones up, now I'm picking his up. But no, I have got a really good relationship with him, probably because of that history of giving him an opportunity, come from East Burwood, really good community coach, and then coach the Coburg Tigers. And then, obviously, Richo's been at 6 clubs. So he's been battered and bruised a little bit, and he's really hardened. And I think the big thing with Richo that I've seen, he's a great communicator. He's a really good communicator, and you've got to be that now, because you've got a lot of staff, you've got members, you've got supporters that want success. But his big strength is being able to sit back behind, one out, one back, with a lot of great coaches.
Is it a management role now, senior coach?
Yeah, it is, but he's very much still hands-on. Mm. But I think this year's, they had a pretty good year last year, the Saints, and obviously with Jake Carlisle coming in, training well, Nathan Brown getting him to bolster, and that's been the big area for the Saints, having some big, strong bodies down there. Paddy McCartan, I know you love him, Moons. Mm-hmm. If he can have a good run at it, I think he's probably got the best hands in the competition. Paddy, he could be something else. And just the obviously improvement of a lot of the younger players, Nick Rewalt and Montagna, and Sean Dempster in the leadership group, they've handed the reins over. And a bit like yourself, Moons, you get to that stage where you're just like a father figure. And I think that's a real positive at the Saints, that those guys have been able to take a step back. But to answer your question, yeah, I do have a chat now and again to Richo. Whether he uses it or not is up to him. But the experiences that I had at the Tigers are great. And he can learn from that, no doubt.
Because of his time, and I said before, he's been in holiday mode. I didn't mean like that. I mean like more like...
Yeah.
Because he's had a little bit of time to put this group together. Is it now the time where St Kilda supporters are going to put a little bit of pressure on and say, we want to see results, because he has been in the job? I think this will be his fourth year in the job. Is that right?
That's right. This is his fourth year.
So 4 years in the job, putting a list together, which is a very good young list, as you said. Is it now time that St Kilda supporters need to see results, or we've still got a little bit more time?
Yeah, it's interesting, Moons. I think that they've put on the page that they want to play finals. And I think that's the next step of their development. 12 wins normally get you in. Whether it was a favourable draw last year is irrelevant. 12 wins, 8 times out of 10 gets you into the finals. They didn't achieve that last year. So you can see them coming into pre-season, the hunger's there. Excuse me. But I think the fact that now is the time they need to develop. And as a coach, you've been there for 3 years. You've got the L plates off. You've got your P plates off now. He's ready to go. He's got a good young leadership group. He's got some really good young players that haven't probably tasted a lot of senior football and haven't tasted success for a long time. And I think the fact that Riewoldt and Montagna and Gilbert and Dempster and these guys got to the big dance but didn't get there, thanks to your good self, Moons, and the Pies. But they're still hungry, and they're still driving the group behind the scenes. So I think that's a real positive for Richo. But I think the facts are that St Kilda can improve. And I heard Adam Cooney yesterday on your show, and he said his final eight. He didn't have St Kilda in there. And I look at that and I say, well, gee, if Carlisle can have a pretty good year, if Nathan Brown can bolster full back, if Paddy McCartan can have a run at it, if Billings can now show the fruits of his great potential, there's no reason why they can't. But they can improve and not make the eight, because it's pretty tough. Yeah. I reckon there's 12 or 13 teams that you could pencil in for the eight, and there's probably five or six still in that development phase. Now, I think St Kilda now have gone from development phase to we're just about ready to step through the door, no doubt.
And I suppose what the Bulldogs did last year, I mean, we had Lee Montagna on last week talking about that gives every club, and certainly a club like St Kilda, that's the blueprint. I mean, you can actually do it. I mean, you can have a big year and do big things.
Yeah, well, this time last year, who would have thought Dunkley, Smith, Picken, now household names, Hamling down back, Fletcher Roberts, these type of players are now premiership players, and great credit to Luke Brevidge. But just on the back of that, Matty, I think even the membership at St Kilda went up a little bit straight after the grand final, because the St Kilda people supporters all looking there with puffy dog eyes thinking, I'm going to put the champagne on ice. How long the ice is going to be there, or the champagne and the ice is the question that needs to be asked. But I think the Melbourne supporters, the St Kilda supporters now think, we've got a real crack at it. And round one, I know we're talking, the women's footy, we'll talk about that later on, but round one, St Kilda play Melbourne. Now, their two teams are in the same stage of their development.
Yep.
Ruzzi's done a pretty good job. Handed over the baton to Goodwin. All of a sudden, you're going to see two good young teams going head-to-head.
Just put your coach's hat on again and your coach's association hat about pressure on coaches going into a season. I heard David King on SEN last week talk about Nathan Buckley, and everyone's talking about Bucks because he's got a year to run on his contract. And his thought is the best thing to do, the Collingwood could do for Nathan Buckley is actually sign him for an extra year. So he has a little bit of security there. And if they do start badly, they're not, calling for his head straight away. What's your thoughts on that, Spud?
Yeah, it's a good point by Kingy. I looked at Nathan's comments pre-Christmas, and I was in a very similar position. Had a little bit of fleeting success early in my career, and then the last year of my contract come off two ordinary years. So
you went into a season with 1 year to go.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you know that the hot rod is just about ready to be poked in the middle of your back.
Yep.
And you don't have to be told that. And I went to a board meeting.
Is that when the board just
no, I actually went to
board members look the other way.
It was interesting. We went to the board meeting in February, and we're all excited. Everyone's training the house down this time of year. But deep down, you think, I've got to have a really good run with injury. Got to win some close games and have a little bit of luck to get in there. And the board were, and I said, look, how do we assess the year? We've sort of reinvented a few youngsters, probably a couple of years too late.
Mm.
How do you assess the year of Danny Frawley going forward at the end of August, hopefully finals?
Yep.
And there was deathly silence. And it was just, there was crickets and tumbleweed. And I think, okay, this is interesting. So, and I knew in my heart of hearts what needed to happen. So I just said to the board, look, if we make the finals, let's give us an opportunity to get another contract. But if I don't make it, let's put it on the table right now that it's time for Danny Frawley to walk. Because 5 years is a lifetime as a coach. If you don't have the ultimate success, smart enough to move on. And that actually released a lot of pressure for me. But that was in behind the closed doors. Bucks has actually put it out in the open forum. And I love Bucks. But when he put that out there, when the media, straight away our antenna goes up, and then you look at their draw. You look at the draw and you think, gee, if round 10, mathematically, and I was in a very similar position, I think 13 games, 4 wins, 9 losses, you think, well, time to put the hand up. I coached out the year, and that's another story for another day. But when Buck said that, I said, gee, you've actually made it pretty hard on yourself and put pressure on the board. Now, whether he did that to maybe do the double deuce for the board to say, well, look, I've actually changed over the list since 2010, and they got in the prelim final in his first year, and I've had to reinvent and all these youngsters. It'll be interesting, because that has put, not inadvertently, pressure on Nathan. It's actually put pressure on the board to assess quite quickly how Nathan's going, because, you know, it's a moving beast in AFL land, and once the win-loss gets in the negative, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Well, what is a distraction from a club point of view, player point of view, and from a coach point of view, knowing that the media's after you coming out of contract and you've started the season 2-6?
Yeah, I think you've got to be open and honest with yourself, first and foremost. I think you've got to be really do a self-analysis all the way through, because sometimes you can be in the inner sanctum and not hear the jungle drums outside. So yeah. I think
you're in the bubble.
Yeah, the first thing Nathan needs to do, and that's why he's smart. He will do self-analysis every day. Whether the training's good, he'll tick it off. Oh, I need to work on that. He'll be self-analysing all the way through. And the chemistry and the feel of the group, whether you've got them in your hand, and that's the big thing that you see. You want to see players, the 2-6, I get that, Moon, but are they still playing for the coach? Mm. Are they still doing all those little defensive pursuits? Because that's the first thing that drops off. You know, as a commentator, when you look at sides, when they go down a little bit, human nature suggests you start playing for yourself.
Yep.
So if they're playing for each other, I think the 2-6 is irrelevant. If they start doing the individual things and the body language is not great, I think they're the things that really bind, sell a coach in the end. And that's something that all football people, and in particular Collingwood people, will look at Nathan.
And I think the other thing on the back of what Buck said last year too, Spudders, they can still improve Collingwood and miss the finals.
No doubt.
So where does that leave him in the footy club after the comments?
No, you're spot on. That's why the antennas went straight up. I thought, gee, I just wondered, did he have, and that'd be a question for someone to ask pretty soon, did he have the conversation with the board first?
Had he had his KPIs?
That's right. He had his KPIs stamped to say, mate, you need, and let's have a group decision, not you, let's come up with a group decision with Gary Pert and Eddie and sit down.
Yep.
And, you know, obviously Jeff Walsh is down there as footy director now. So, mate, you probably need to play the finals to get another contract. Now, that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Has that happened? Or did Nathan just say, no, I'm just putting it there fair and square in front so everyone can see, so I can walk around without walking on eggshells? And I think that's a positive, but it'd be just interesting to see whether the board were in on that very important decision for a AFL club.
Just a question on being in clubland. You've been there now for a couple of years. How far the game has come, how much the game has changed since you were coaching at Richmond. How much different has it been for you?
Yeah, well, it was interesting. 2001, I think we had something like 23 interchanges, an average of 20.
Mm.
So then it just went over to 130 a couple of years ago, and the AFL have now dragged it back to 90. The big difference is that just the whole field, the whole 36 players running up and back and up and back. And I think, you know, to have a go-to forward is great, but they need to be really athletic now. And as Moon's said, you know, later on in your career, you know, if your legs aren't there, it's just so hard.
The game goes past you very quickly, Spud.
Very quickly. And you can see why Gary Ablett, and I love the 90s and because I played in that era in the 80s, because those guys at the end of their careers could still hang on because the ball was kicked to them.
Mm.
And Dunstall and Gary Ablett and Plugger and these guys were just one out in the square. So they didn't
leave the 50.
That's right. They didn't go that far on their holidays. You know,
now you've got to come up to the stoppage.
Plugger would have Asma Leak just walking to the goal square. So, but those guys were able to play for another 2 or 3 years because the defensive mechanisms of the modern game weren't in place. Can we get back to that stage? Probably not. Can we get back to getting a good forward on a good defender? I think that's a big challenge for the game going forward, full stop. I think we need to attack more, and I love defence, don't get me wrong, but I'm more the one-on-one. So the whole defensive mechanisms, and Luke Beveridge as defence is all about getting the ball and keeping in there.
Yep.
So you say who the best defensive six are, and we'll talk about that later on after the break. It's 18 now.
Mm.
Who's got the best defensive mechanisms in the game? And you look at the game, Moons, and I know you're all over the gridiron. Belichick's the best defensive coach in the comp. That's why I think they'll win the Super Bowl next week against Atlanta. Atlanta get a lot of scores, and I don't follow it closely, but I think, hang on a minute.
They give up a lot of scores.
They give up a lot. Yep. To get a lot, you've got to give up a lot.
Yep.
So the big thing to answer your question, Maddie, is the whole group have to have buy-in in the whole style of play. In the past, the midfield, and you still have your midfield coach and your forward line coach and defensive coach, but your offensive coach and your defensive coach, that's the big things.
So your drills are involving everyone.
That's right. Yeah. So most clubs now have got an offensive coach, so it's all about ball movement. And then there's a defensive type coach. Now, Adam Kingsley is the defensive type coach at St Kilda. I wouldn't say type. He looks at total defence. Now, that's the forward pocket.
It's starting from your
forward. That's your forward
line.
Pocket. Right. And that's why Luke Beveridge, their defensive mechanism was to get territory, get it in, get the little mosquito fleet in Dunkley Picken and Clay Smith, Dalhouse, Caleb Daniel, just keeping the ball in there and just be like buzzards around the ball, trying to get a feed. And then Sydney's defence is different. They rely on their big bodies and the stoppages, and then they've got Rampy and Grundy and these guys coming and taking intercept marks. So there's all different types of defence. But I think that's the big thing that I've found, Matty, is the whole team has to have buy-in on the defensive mechanisms and the attacking. So it'll be interesting in a couple of years. Can we get back to maybe, I'm not sure how we do it in the AFL, but I would just love to see Cameron Mooney on a Matty Scarlett and other teammates, just when you see a stoppage, you look up the other end of the ground and think, okay, if we win the ball here, it's going to be on.
Battles within battles.
Yeah. I think we'll get back to it, but the attacking side of the game was good last year and hopefully it continues to improve.
Let's talk a bit of defence if we can. Danny, that's your specialty. And I want to talk about the best defence in the competition at the moment. You talked before the news that it's pretty much a team game at the moment, team defence. But who is the best back six, do you think, at the moment?
Matty, it's a hard one to define because you look at the back six. I think the Eagles. I think the Eagles have got that. But the best defence is the Bulldogs, because the way they defend in their forward line, they get it in, they keep territory, they hold it in. The Bex six man for man, it was Hawthorn before Brian Lake. The Sydney Swans with Lealea coming in. I think he's been a beauty.
He's big,
Grundy had an outstanding year. Rampy was all Australian. Nick Smith's a good lockdown. So I think man for man, I think they've just about got the best six. So it depends on the way you play too. See, the West Coast Eagles, for example, they've got a great defence because they put a lot of pressure on the ball around the clearance. And enter McGovern. You know, any high ball, he doesn't worry about
his markers now.
Yeah, he doesn't worry about the opponent at all. He's relying on his midfield to get some height on the ball, not penetration, not low darting kicks. They're the really hard ones to defend.
Yep.
Above his eyes, McGovern's just about the best intercept mark in the comp.
It's almost becoming the number one stat for a defender now, Spud. It's not so much your one-on-one work. It's the guy who can intercept the ball and then get the rebound going the other way.
Yeah, I agree, but the Golden Fist has still got a place to play in those halving of the contest, Moons. But I'm with you. No, I think the intercept mark now, it's a point of attack. Mm. And if you can get, you know, a two-on-one and get someone just to do that little body spoil and put your hands in the air there and get it, you know, Josh Gibson, for example, the height of his career is, you know, Hawthorn. You think of their wins, how good was he in the final series? If in pressure on a ball, and I think that's what happens in finals, a lot of pressure. Grundy had one of the great finals games last year, kept them in the contest. Mm. All of a sudden, Luke Beveridge, by all reports at halftime, said to the forwards, bring the ball to the ground. We don't want Grundy and Rampy marking the ball. The ball was continually going into the Bulldogs forward line. Then after halftime, Dunkley, Picken, all these type of players
just
come into it
because
the ball hit the deck. So I think the intercept mark is a huge weapon now in AFL footy.
The best key defender in the competition, 9-4-2-9-11-16, and maybe a couple of the best emerging key defenders in the competition, Spud.
Yeah, Alex Rance, without a doubt. He's taken over from Scarlett. Scarlett was a one-in-generation player, Silvani before him. I didn't think we'd see another one so early after Scarlett. Rance is a star. He came into the game. His kicking wasn't great. His ability last year to keep a 40-point defeat, not being a 100-point defeat, 100 was unbelievable. He's a freak. He's quick. Nothing phases him. You can see he's a great entertainer as well, which is quite interesting being a defender on the ground. You've got to be probably a blue-collar worker, let the forwards do all the
all the
flary stuff. But he's the best defender. Lealea, I like him. I think he's going to come through. Harris Andrews. People say, gee, who's Harris Andrews? young defender at the Brisbane Lions. The ball's going in there a lot. Very rarely gets beaten one-on-one. And obviously, Talia's are very good. So I think Andrews and the young Sydney Swan defender, probably the heir apparent for those two.
You touched on Carlisle a little bit earlier. Obviously, he's coming back. Plays his best football down back, and I'm sure that's where St. Kilda are going to play him. How's his pre-season going?
Yeah, well, look, you'd like him to be, you know, not as good as McGovern.
Because he's an intercept mark.
Yeah,
as well.
I think Carlo, you put him in that bracket of the intercept marks, who are some really good intercept marks in the competition. And you look at his form at Essendon when he was up and running, he is like a McGovern. Robbie Tarrant's another one. Carlisle can really add another weapon to St Kilda. He's training hard. That's all he needs to do at the moment. Put his head down, his bum up. He's sweating in the gym. He's a really good worker. He just needs to get his body sound. So he just needs to play some consistent footy. Two youngsters, I think, in that intercept category that are coming through. And this is where West Coast have really picked one out of nowhere off the rookie list. Barras. He just reads the ball beautifully. And young Wiedering. He's going to be a gun. You know, what he did in his first year for Carlton under pressure, under siege down there, he reads the ball beautifully. So he's another good young intercept marker coming through.
Defending the Eddie Betts type player, I want to talk about that because I looked at the draft, moons up at the draft, and a lot of clubs were drafting the specialist small forwards that can put pressure on and kick goals. Eddie Betts is the template. What about defending that? Are clubs putting a lot of time into that in this preseason?
No, they are. They are, Matty. I think they're super important because when the ball comes in low, this is where these guys come into play. They're really good marks as well. Not only Eddie Betts' good crumb, but Eddie Betts out of the goal square is a really hard matchup. Now, traditionally, a fullback is used to that mental pressure in the goal square. You know, you get a bit twitchy, you get a bit sweaty around the friend's ring. But a young, smallish type defender. So the guys, you think, you want to go to war. If there's a war tomorrow, who are you going to pick? I reckon Nick Smith's one at Sydney. I think you look at him and you think, just blue-collar worker, gets the job done. Geary at St Kilda, very rarely gets beaten one-on-one, very courageous. And Neville Jetta, I think he's one that I've watched closely over the last couple of years. He's the guy that is a locked-down small defender, and they're super, super important in today's footy because every forward line's got one of those little mosquito guys running around. You need to nail them nice and early.
With those defenders, Spud, do we now just have, do we just have these locked down? I mean, Nick Smith's a lockdown, but he can still get the ball. Do they need to still get their 12, 15 possessions type of game as well, of just being a stopper player?
No, they do, Moons. No, they do. They need to play team defence as well. But there's probably a thing where the coach would say, okay, there's a point kick in. Eddie Betts is 40 metres behind the 18-man zone. Make sure you're the deepest man in the zone. And if Adelaide get the ball, start running towards Eddie Betts. Because how many times have we seen Eddie run into an open goal? Mm. So There's a point there, Moons, where the coach would say, okay, 60% ball, and normally it's 100% ball, 60% ball, 40% opponent. I think that's why a Geary and a Smith and a Jetta need to play their cards close to their chest and say, okay, I'm just going to reference off here. I'm going to play team defence. I'm going to make sure he doesn't get it because they're the guys that can generate a lot of enthusiasm for the opposition as well, those type of forwards.
And the other defender I want to talk about is the run and gun, the line-breaking defender. Heath Shaw's done it for years. Jason Johannesson was the breakout player
and
won a Norm Smith doing it last year.
Well, what about Johannesson? Let's talk. We're all up there, I think, the prelim final. The game was locked down, 10-minute mark into the last quarter. Who kept running and taking the game on? I thought, what a courageous effort. It's simple to say, just run. But he was leaving his opponent, getting to the intercept and getting the ball inside their forward 50 for Smith to kick a couple of late goals, sealing goals for the Western Bulldogs. Everyone thinks about the grand final, but his effort in that last quarter got them into the grand final.
He made things happen, didn't he?
But you're right, Heath Shaw, you said him, he's the premier. He's the eminent running halfback. He's very good one-on-one, reads the play extremely well. But again, his strength become his weakness in the prelim. Yep. Luke Beveridge went to school. Keep him in the goal square. And that's easier said than done because you need
put Dixon on him.
Yeah, you need territory and you need to get the ball in there for that to happen. And Heath, unfortunately, had four goals kicked in on him in a prelim, but he'll be rid of that. St Kilda's got Montagna. I think he's been a really good support level down there for the running halfback. And I think Brody Smith at Adelaide, he's a guy that's got, he's a magnificent kick. Like when he gets the ball in the halfback flank, he's 60 metre searers, not the high ball, the one that can just penetrate and not go too high for that intercept mark. I think he's a huge weapon for Donnie Pike and the Adelaide boys.
It's going to be amazing for the Doggies' point of view. Get Johannesson, as you said, but Bob comes back. that run and carry that they can have off that half back line, because it has become the ultimate weapon now, but I guess over the last few years of getting that guy down there. And you still got to learn, teach them to defend, because as we said, Heath Shaw gets taken deep and got goals kicked on in a prelim. But the fact that they can open up a game and set play up the way that they do, they're so important.
Oh, they're so important. I've got one more defender, Matty. I thought I've come in here and you guys put me under the heat nice and early.
Give you some homework.
The best all-rounder defender.
Yep.
Now, these guys, these don't fall off trees. They're like key forwards. They're diamonds. Easton Wood's the best all-round defender in the competition. Why? Very good at one-on-one. Great intercept marker. Great counter-attacker. Great communicator. And can just find space, and great courage. He's the best all-round defender in the competition. I think Rampy's probably gets the silver medal. Josh Gibson was in that bracket. So if you can get one of those best all-rounders, you think, gee, I don't mind if Easton Wood plays fullback. He reads the play well. He can play one-on-one. I think he's one of the most important defenders in the competition, no doubt.
Danny Frawley with us in the studio after the 8:30 news. Getting a bit of feedback, Spud.
Yeah.
On the SMS.
Not used to this, Matty. Yeah. But I've got to get used to it because we love our listeners, and there's been a few
they come for you,
people.
You don't mention their boys or their teams. They come for you.
We're going to go to callers, Matty?
Well, just give me your SMS. Here.
My phone's just gone red hot. There's an old fella, old Mike Sheen, the godfather we call him here at SEN now. He said, no, it's your domain, Spud. But, you know, in capital letters, what about Dale Morris? Now, Dale's a great player, but we said current, you know, superstars in that position. And I love Dale. I love the way he goes about it. But he's getting like you, Godfather. He's getting a bit long in the tooth, mate. So cop that.
Daryl's in Geelong, wants to have a chat to Spud. Hello, Daryl.
How you going, guys?
Good, mate. What do you got?
Good. Well, I've got Alex Rams as clearly the best defender at the moment. But I'm with Mike Sheen there. You've left Dale Morris out, mate. That's a sin.
Jeez, that's the second one coming your way about Dale Morris.
Yeah. No, look, I don't think he's the preeminent one-on-one player at the moment. Rance is far and away shoulders above. And that was the question you asked me, Matty.
Yep, it was.
I'd like to pick eight, but you said one. Yep. I said Rance. I stand corrected.
Tell you what Dale Morris has been, having actually played on him. He'd be 6'2", but he plays on guys 6'4", 6'5".
Pound for pound.
Or he plays on Eddie Betts.
Yep.
You know, pound for pound, he's been one of the best defenders.
No doubt. Come off the rookie list, another great rookie list defender.
Quick one from Billy and Berwick. G'day, Bill.
G'day, Matty. Moondog.
Billy.
G'day, boys. How you going?
Good, mate.
Good, Billy.
What's your question?
But I reckon the best Golden Fifth brothers, and I say Golden Fifth because I think I've seen better kick to the radio, would be the McDonald's.
Yeah, no doubt. No, very good defenders. Very good up in, you know what, young Oscar. Tom McDonald was in line for All-Australian at the start of 2016. Yeah. Petered off a little bit, but they need a big ear from those two young lads, no doubt.
Now, before you go, you're still involved with the Trots. What have we got coming up?
Yeah, they've got the Ainsbury Victoria Cup, Matty, on Saturday night. We've got a Kiwi superstar, Lazarus. Probably the best horse in the world, Matty, up against our hometown hero, Hector JJ. Victoria Cup worth $400,000. Next week, we've got the Hunter Cup. Lenny the Shark, Inter Dominion champion against Smolder, who won last year's Inter Dominion. And it's just going to be a great night out there at Tabcorp Park. And guess what, Matty? The entry is free. So to see these absolute superstars of the Australasian trotting scene, you see the likes of Mark Purden and Emma Stewart, get out there on Saturday night for the Victoria Cup.
And you're on the board, aren't you? So you've got it in your blood.
I've got it in my blood, Matty. My first job was getting some pencils at Coles as a youngster. I get the long ones, cut them into three, sell them for 20 cents each, and the bit at the end with the rubber, I sold that for 30.
Yep.
And make about $22. And then I got promoted to chief poop scooper on the track, and then got a big promotion to put the numbers up at the Ballarat Trot. So it's in me blood, Matty.
Fantastic. It's great to have you on board.
No, great to be here. Well done, guys.
2017.
Have a good day.